Talk Shoe.
Recorded live. This is an interactive podcast designed for audience participation. Come talk, text chat, or listen live at TalkShoe.com.
This is a Roni Zone Radio special event. From the golden age of radio, when the world huddled around their radios to hear their favorite stories of drama, suspense, and comedy, we reveal that today the timeless art is still alive. Even in 2007, a great script, great actors, some mood music and sound effects can draw listeners into deep, immersive stories that the world enjoyed in the past. So tonight, Roni Zone Productions presents the 2007 Fan Audio Online Summit, in which we will highlight the best of fan audio dramas and parodies, and will introduce you to groups of internet producers using updated technology to recreate the timeless craft of the past. We will also discuss the hows, whys, and wherefores of fan audio collaboration, production, and much, much more. So sit back, relax, and listen to just a taste of the best of fan audio on the internet. Hey everybody, this is the 2007 Fan Audio Online Summit. I'd like to welcome you all to our summit today, and I also want to introduce my co-host, Mr. William Lundeen.
Other.
Okay. Now, we have a number of folks here, and, you know, again, I just want to welcome everybody, and our goal today is really to enlighten everybody as far as their different pocket of the fan audio work that they're probably used to, is that there are a lot of other great things on the internet today, and I kind of wanted to just bring everybody together so we could talk about it and trade some ideas and also highlight some of the other great stuff that I've been finding. And we're going to introduce a couple of groups, and I really want to kind of dive in because this gentleman has a cell phone going on, so I want to get him through first, have him, give him a chance to talk and let us know about his group. And that is Jeffrey Bridges. Jeffrey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. No problem. Now, you are the force behind Pendant Productions. And if you could give us just a little idea of when it started, why did you put it together, and just some highlights along the way.
Pendant started back in August of 2004. Actually, the roots of it go back even farther, back to 1995 with Star Trek Defiant text-based email kind of role-playing list. And over the years, you know, it's grown and morphed, and it eventually started going into radio dramas that one of our members was doing, and there was a little bit of creative differences there, and a bunch of people asked if I, as the founder and creator of the group, could take them over, and I did. And that was pretty much how Pendant started that way. Not that long after, I heard the original Superman radio dramas from the 30s and 40s, and I've been a huge Superman fan all my life, and that's when the idea hit me that I could try to do a modernized version of it based on the current comic books. And we were lucky enough to be able to get that show on supermanhomepage.com, and that just blew the audience numbers out of the water. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe how many people were listening. And because of that, that many more people just kept joining and wanting to help out. And so we just grew from there. We've got almost 300 members now. We've got 8 monthly shows and at least 3 more coming in the rest of this year, possibly 4 or 5. Those are still in development. So it's really taken off now.
Now, your URL is pendantaudio.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, what I really love about your stuff, not only is it incredible stuff, but it's so diverse. It's not just one type of genre. And I mean, how did the people started kind of jumping onto Indiana Jones and Wonder Woman, and how did you pull such a diverse group together?
You know, it was luck more than anything. When we started with Defiant, we just had the original people that were part of the Defiant text list, and they're all playing their own characters that they created. And when I started the Superman show, we didn't have anybody else in Pendant except for those people. And, you know, due to time constraints or recording capabilities or whatever, they weren't able to really fill a lot of those roles. So I called in favors from, like, every friend and family member that I could possibly think of that could play a role for me. And
sure.
So that was all we had to start with. But once that show got on SupermanHomepage.com, the members just kept flooding in. And it was so surprising to me how excited the fans were about the stuff. And they just wanted to help out so bad. And it was because of that we had so many people willing to help out that we could start these other projects because we needed extra directors. And then every time we post a role, we're getting, you know, 20, 30 auditions for it. When we just posted the casting call for our one of our other original shows that's coming out in a couple of months, The Kingery, we had more auditions than we've ever had for anything. We had over 200 auditions for like 12 roles, I think it was. It was just insane.
Wow. I remember the first Pendant Audio project I listened to. It was an Indiana Jones episode, and I was pulled into it because of the music was from the time, obviously. But the way it was put together was so incredible that I am from the movie kind of background, and I am tied to ambient sound effects, so you feel like you're there. But what I thought was really incredible about that particular episode is that the music actually created the mood. And so there's some real creativity with what you're doing there. And I definitely wanted you to be a part of it, because I think whatever segment you're in, it sounds like you definitely have had a lot of success, and that's fantastic. But I think some people that do maybe other little things feel like they're all by themselves, and I definitely wanted to highlight you, especially because I think, you know, definitely you're another one of those pioneers of fan audio, but also you're doing such a diverse work, and it's really growing. So first of all, I just wanted to just congratulate you on all your great work, but also just let people know about what you're doing. So, you know, hopefully you'll have more than 300 folks. So,
thank you very much. That's very nice of you.
What are you guys, are you just continuing to work on the different tracks? Is there maybe a project that is just going to be huge in 2007, or is it just kind of, you're just staying the course with the different storylines?
Well, we have two new original, not fan-based shows coming out in 2007, and possibly another fan-based feature coming later in the summer, but we haven't finalized plans for that yet. And we have another fan-based serial starting up in May. But I think really the biggest thing that most people are excited about right now is that starting at the end of January, just in a couple months, January 31st, our Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman shows are crossing over in one nine-part story that's going to cover 3 months, and that seems to have everybody really excited.
Definitely. Your shows almost seem like a comic book in that things cross over and they're kind of as different reimaginings and all this kind of stuff. So it really sounds like it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, and that's something we've tried really hard to maintain with like our Indiana Jones show, like you said, trying to preserve the feel of the movies. And the same thing with our comic book-based shows is that we're trying really hard to preserve that comic book feel from them and make them feel like you're just hearing a comic.
Mm-hmm. What I am stymied by is the similarity of the voices sometimes. It's almost exactly like you're hearing the actor, especially with Indiana Jones. I mean, I was really blown away. So you guys really have put together just some stellar actors. Was that a tough kind of a process to find these folks? I mean, it sounds like there's a bunch of people that are trying out, but I mean, you guys really hit stuff out of the ballpark, I would say, pretty much from the beginning.
Thanks for that. yeah, actually, with the Indiana Jones project was the first project where we had Well, when we put up the casting calls, we asked the actors to try to mimic the actors from the movies as close as possible to try to, you know, get their inflections and their speech patterns down. Because, you know, there have been a lot of different people that have played Superman or James Bond or Batman, but there's only ever been one Indiana Jones. And
sure.
So that's what is most familiar to people in their minds. And so we put that, I mean, when I put that casting call up, I didn't know how well people would be able to respond to that or how well they'd be able to mimic those voices. But I was really surprised with the auditions we got, and I think they're doing an absolutely fantastic job, especially Jerry Scullion, who plays Indiana Jones. He is Harrison Ford to me. He just blows me away.
Yeah. I forgot about James Bond also. You guys are doing James Bond work as well, right?
Actually, James Bond was a seven-part feature that we ran back in 2005, I think it was, that finished then. But actually, mm-hmm. we're planning on doing another one, hopefully later on this year. So
that's just really incredible. I mean, I hate to gush, but it's just to do a fan audio production and get it done. That, I mean, that's a monumental feat. But then to take different genres and put together groups of people that really are concentrating on doing the work. I mean, I don't know. Just again, congratulations on your work. And it's ependentaudio.com, and there's just a whole host of great episodes there. And Jeffrey, I just want to congratulate you on your work, and I thank you so much for popping by today. And hopefully, you know, you'll give this show a little promotion, and we'll let you know where it's going to be posted and all this kind of stuff. But if you can, kind of hang out, and we'll be talking more about some bare bones production stuff later on. Maybe you can give us some tips that'll help us all out.
Sure thing. Thanks very much. I'll hang out as long as I can.
No problem. Thank you, Jeffrey. All right. And Mr. Buddy Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much, Jeff. That was neat, listening to the discussion you just had there with Jeffrey.
Did you have any questions, by the way?
No, I have to admit I got carried away exploring the site and downloading some episodes to listen to later.
Well, there you go. And again, I thank you, Mr. Jeffrey Bridges. And now I want to bring on Mr. Nathan Butler. How are you, Nathan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Now, you are the founder of StarWarsFanWorks.com, and I would like you to introduce yourself to the group, because I think we're going to have a lot of folks listening that probably have never heard of it before. So give us a little snapshot of when it began, why and how it began, and then also just some highlights along the way.
Okay. Well, kind of do the Reader's Digest version a little bit. Jeff and I discussed this back on an earlier interview thing that he and I did for Roni's Own, and there was recently a two-part episode of Andrew Bettis' show In the Beginning, where it's a thing called a serial edition he calls Foundations, where we talked about some of that stuff. So some of the more detailed stuff kind of back in the, you know, in the background. But basically, StarWarsFanWorks.com was set up with the goal in mind to basically be a hub for the Star Wars fan audio community. It was a community that was growing, you know, kind of steadily but somewhat slowly back in the day, back around about mid-2003 at the time when I kind of conceived of the idea of doing the site. The original kind of unofficial mission statement was to do, like, to take fan audio and do news coverage for audio as well as if not better than TFN Fan Films was doing for fan films, and then to provide sort of a directory for the fan audio genre that was done as well as, if not better than, what a site called the Star Wars Fan Film Database was doing for fan films. It was sort of a directory, a news place, but a place to bring people together who were into this thing. The goal wasn't so much to, you know, to be the main producer out there, but it kind of got turned around. Basically, it was like a confluence of three events that really helped get it off the ground. One was just the fact that Lou Tambone of StarWarsWithAZ.com was in the process of revamping his site at the time, and switching between servers and such. And it just so happened that my Star Wars Timeline Gold, that's been around for, I guess we're going on the 10th anniversary here in a few months, but the timeline was hosted on his site. So that gave him sort of the opportunity to say, hey, you know, is there anything you've ever wanted to do a fan site about that you haven't yet? You know, pitch an idea, and maybe we could, you know, link up and you and do that, because FanWorks started as part of that family. I mean, it still is, but it's now, you know, its own server account and everything.
Sure.
At the same time, there really, like I said, there really wasn't much fan audio out there at the time, and as of mid-2003, when this idea popped up, I had one of the few radio shows that were out there. Jedi Talk, the first Star Wars fan-made radio show, had ended. You had others out there in foreign languages, but the only other English one that was out there at the time was Digital Llama Radio, hosted over at Force.net. So I had my show, being Colonel Radio, being hosted alongside my timeline. And then Chris Handel and I started working on Second Strike, the first, you know, internet-released Star Wars fan audio drama. So that was hosted alongside it, and as that was getting done, I was making kind of a spin-off series called Anthology based on that. So that was hosted next to it. One of the guys who worked on Second Strike got interested in audio and started doing a project called Resurrection, needed a place to host it, so I started hosting that next to it. And one of the three, or I guess one of the two other early Star Wars fan audio dramas that were being worked on at the same time of Second Strike, a project called Smuggler's Run, was going to need home. So it was kind of like, you know, just out of kind of, you know, trying to promote this stuff and trying to, you know, be nice and help people out. I'd already brought a lot of these projects together, but it was still on the website where to get there, you had to go to a website that said timeline. And then here's all this other stuff right alongside it. And the third thing that came together was that right around that time, that was when TFN Fan Films, which was the community where Star Wars fan audio really started to blossom. I mean, a lot of us were people into fan films who spun off and started doing audio, particularly inspired by Digital Llama Radio, and then, which in and of itself was created as a way to promote that team's fan film, The Formula. And it got to a point where TFN Fan Films wanted to start focusing more on films that were not just Star Wars. They were having to figure out how they were going to be using their bandwidth and such. And Second Strike, because of its mature content, it's a more violent, kind of gritty type of story. Because of that,
sure,
it really wasn't going to fit with TFN anyway. So it was never a question of, well, are they going to host this or not? But whenever Rise of Nobility, which was one that was coming up in September of 2003, when it was nearing release, they'd been promoting the heck out of it because it was part of the community, but when it came time to decide about hosting, they said, no, we're not doing any more audio. If you're it's already here, like Stormtrooper Bob and Digital on the Radio were, fine. You're grandfathered in. On that, nothing new. At the same time, there were some people pushing, I think now, especially looking back on it very wrongly, I thought so at the time too, but, you know, nobody listened to me. There was a group that was pushing for having a separate fan audio board set up at theforce.net to move that audio discussion out of the fan film community. They believed at the time that there was enough interest in fan audio that it would move and some of the traffic would move from board to board and you get a lively fan audio discussion going, and that's not what happened. Instead, the board basically died a slow, painful death, or I guess a quick, painful death. Mm. So it was almost as though we had sort of been ostracized from this community in which we had grown up. You know, most of the people, if you look at the cast list for Second Strike, most of those people were either members of the fan film community or big-name fan film people who at the time, I can, you know, for fan film fans were considered sort of like A-list type people, you know, or something where they somehow came in through fan film because there wasn't a fan audio community for Star Wars to speak of. And here we were, you know, kind of like left dangling in the wind. And just when all those three things kind of came together, I said, you know, if nobody else is going to pick this up and do it, I've got the opportunity, you know, I might as well. And it just so happened that, you know, this picked up right around the same time that Rise of Nobility was coming out. So there was a panel at Dragon Con that they had set up that helped push the audio stuff. This was right around the same time that Rich Siegfried had been inspired to do his own show, Requiem of the Outcast. So that was coming up. So just a lot of things really just fell into place just right in September of 2003 to make this happen.
Well, and I would agree that it was like everything all kind of lined up like the end of the TFN area, and then also the kind of ramping up to the next, final three Star Wars films. I think everything kind of had a perfect progression for the type of subgenre of the fan audio work that you spearheaded. So, you know, with all the releases of, I mean, those are groundbreaking shows, and it's interesting that they all kind of came in from fan film. I mean, Chris and Elle, and, you know, because I think you worked on some fan film stuff as well, correct?
Yeah, I at the time, it's kind of funny because the main fan film I worked on hasn't even come out yet. It kept getting derailed. I came into the community. I did a lot of voice work. I did some voice work as Obi-Wan and Yoda in a couple of Flash animation films called That Prequel Movie and Attack of the Killer Clones from Outer Space. And I did some voice work for one that's coming out relatively soon called The Rising Threat. Did some, like, ADR type work. But then Prelude to Hope was sort of the main thing. I kind of got involved as a script editor, eventually became one of the lead rewriters, basically rewriting scenes. And it just so happened that right around the time some computer problems screwed up one of the last edits of it, the main guy, the director, Devin Reed, went off to join the Marines. And he wound up spending a lot of time in, you know, in the Middle East, then in Iraq with one of the first Marine groups into Baghdad. Then he was positioned in Djibouti in Africa. And they've kind of reformatted. In fact, if you check out some of my newer audio drama stuff in the last couple of years, there's an audio drama called A New Hope, or A New Hope. Called Nothing Changes. There you go. You know, I don't know where that is. But Nothing Changes is basically when he came back and decided he wanted to redo Prelude to Hope, just start it from scratch. They went with a much more gritty war thing, much grittier than Second Strike has ever been. But at the time, you know, we did some revising and trying to rewrite the original story kind of in a better way. And when we didn't use that script, that became Nothing Changes. So you can sort of see where my fan film roots are in that sense. But yeah, I was a huge part of that community. I take most of the blame for the hyping up that Prelude to Hope got, because it was going to turn out so well, and now all that exists is like a few good, you know, at least of the original project, is a few rough cuts that I've got sitting on the computer here that I happened to get before a lot of the files were lost. But
sure.
Fan audio for Star Wars worked backwards from history, is the way that I always like to put it. It's not that we went from written to audio to film just kind of like leapt out ahead, you know, and then it turns around and film then spawns audio. We went written, film, audio, as opposed to the other way around, which is, you know, I mean, it worked for us, but of course, you know, it's not the natural progression. So a lot of times audio still gets forgotten about because fan films are the ones that are more flashy. You see them. There's the George Lucas giving out the awards and Lucasfilm giving out awards each year and that sort of thing. So we got a long way to go visibility-wise. But as far as the community growing, we've kind of reached a point of maturity in some ways at this point, which is good.
Well, and I think there's three different areas that Star Wars FanWorks kind of focuses on. There is the radio show, and then there's the drama, and then there is the parody, and I don't know if there's anything, you know, beyond that. But what has been really great about it is and I can only speak for what I've seen within the group, only because I'm a part of it, is the help that you and others have been to kind of help people grow in the genre. There are certain times and certain elements of the audio, especially in podcasting, is there's very little help at all. And what's been really great about this group here is that the kind of growth has been kind of helping each other out along the way, and you can kind of track the progression of how things have really grown. And especially, you know, when you look at somebody, I definitely want to talk to Rich Siegfried in a little bit. I mean, if somebody who's grown leaps and bounds beyond anything I could have ever even thought about is Rich. And I think it's the kind of family that we have. Sometimes we fight, and sometimes we don't. But that's what's really cool about, I think, Star Wars FanWorks is it's everybody kind of works together.
Yeah, well,
go ahead.
Oh, I think probably the epitome of when we kind of saw that, I mean, that was sort of the goal in the first place, was to try to help promote things. And as the genre has gotten bigger, I personally, part of the reason why I'm moving into stuff like doing more voice acting work and doing more original stuff and trying to help people out as opposed to producing more and more of my stuff, that's why a couple of my shows are ending very soon, just they're kind of run their course. I want to move back into sort of a patron role, but I think that probably the best example of that was, you know, after talking to Rich and talking to Michael Stackpole, the Star Wars author, we all kind of had this thought that wouldn't it be great to have something out there, kind of like a – I mean, now, of course, we've got Podcasting for Dummies, the book, but wouldn't it be great to have something out there like a Star Wars Fan Audio for Dummies type of thing? And that's what led us to Fan Audio Made Easy, which has its last episode being released tonight. It's a 36-episode series of just, you know, tips and pointers and stuff. And now Fan Audio News Source, which is a podcast kind of to wrap up news that comes out through FanWorks, for those who don't get a chance to visit the site that much, has answers to fan audio questions that try to give tips. That's probably the one thing that, and I don't want to say I helped foster it, because it was me and a lot of other people trying to be helpful at the same time because we wanted to see the genre grow, but it is one of those things that we kind of took as a point of pride that we did not want to become like the fan film community. Because by the time FanWorks began, the fan film community had sort of degenerated. Sometimes, you know, you get people who are very helpful. Other times, a new person shows up, asks a basic question, and rather than getting an answer, gets pounced on and ripped to shreds. And we did not want to see that happen with this community. And luckily, we're still in a position, for the most part, where people tend to be relatively helpful and, you know, loving it.
Just give me one or two or three moments in the life of Star Wars FanWorks where you said, that's going to be something that I'll never forget.
Okay. You talking about personally or for the genre itself?
In the genre itself.
Okay, in the genre itself, I think the first thing that happened, or not first, I mean, just one of the big things that happened was to see the advent of podcasting, because that changed the dynamics. I mean, it's always been easier to produce a radio show than an audio drama or an audio parody. I mean, I know this from experience. I'm on my fifth podcast or fifth radio show right now. I've done probably, you know, six, seven, eight, however many audio dramas, and it's just so much faster. I mean, it's not necessarily as fulfilling sometimes, but sometimes it is. But it's so much more complicated. So when podcasting began, you started to see this huge boom in fan-made radio shows and podcasts out there. And the focus of the entire genre sort of shifted, because it seemed as though for a while there we started to see radio shows and audio dramas kind of keeping pace with each other just briefly. And then, boom, podcasting comes, and now parodies, you know, you hardly see any parodies.
Sure.
This year we're doing the 2007 Fan Audio Awards right now. In fact, the voting ends tonight at midnight, another thing for tonight. But as we're doing this, I notice, you know, there's Tatooine TV, there's Lost Cause, there's Jedi Babies. There really wasn't anything else parody-wise this year. And if you look at audio dramas, you got Runaway, the five-part Conquest of the Empire, the first two parts of the Sins of Salvation series, though they're handling it as separate parts as far as awards go. I mean, that's four if you count the two parts as separate parts. And then the radio shows are just going nuts. And we've seen several radio shows that appear post one episode, you don't hear from them again for a while, then all of a sudden they pop up and say, yeah, by the way, you know, we're done. We decided to move on past it. Podcasting has led to so much in terms of ease that, you know, the genre has shifted in that regard. I'd say also convention appearances, the ability, when Rich and Ron and Janine and Amy and I were at the very first Con Carolinas, or the first Con Carolinas that we went to, the one in 2004, I guess it was. And there were people who recognized us from the audio stuff. That was when I was like, you know, boom. You know, that's it. I can't believe this stuff. I mean, you know, this means we've sort of arrived to a degree. And I guess the other big event, the one that I'm like, you know, nothing will ever be the same, is what I would say is sort of the passing of this current generation or the previous generation, because there are people like me and Rich and Robbie Chastain and Denny Papin and you and just people who have been around for a very long time who have now sort of reached the point where we've sort of sowed our oats, you know, we put in our roots, and now that we have an audience and we've said a lot of stuff that we wanted to say about Star Wars, we're ready to start branching out. I mean, I put out Echoes last year, which is an original, they call it a patio book, but original novella. I'm working on a novel-length sequel to that. You've got Danny, who is working on Omega Squad Targets and moving away from radio shows, where it was his forte. rich. I mean, the guy's involved in so much stuff that's, you know, insane, including stuff like Port CPD and such that, you know, just makes you want to sit back and go, wow. And then you've got, you know, shows like with you and Robbie. Even before getting more out of Star Wars, you guys were branching out into non-Star Wars topics. Now we're seeing that with Andrew's in the beginning. He's getting into stuff like, you know, like talking about the situation in Iran and stuff and going a little more political. It's podcasting changed things towards radio shows, but I'm not sure if you could say it's for the better or for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
The passing of the generation for Star Wars, I think, is going to be for the worse, because unless people start to fill in those gaps, those niches in the community, the genre is going to suffer for it. There are some people who are excellent who are getting into it, Praying Mantis Productions, EU2 Audio Core, Joe Harrison, Douglas Gonnelly's groups, they're great. But we don't see a lot of people filling those gaps. And, of course, the convention stuff, that's just fun. You know, just it's kind of one of those, you know, what happened to the con stays at the con. You just got to remember that rule and you're fine.
Well, I think the future does look bright, although I would totally agree with you, and we don't have to totally cover this right now. We've talked about it before, but I do think that the vision needs to branch out a little bit, and I'll just leave it there. So,
very much so. And it's also, you know, I will say another thing, you know, I don't want to put it, you know, too much on my shoulders, but some of it is me and Danny and Rich also with, you know, the parsecs and all that type of thing. I think one of the other things that was a big thing for audio is that we are enough kind of having come to our own that we start to see the Lucasfilm folks somewhat paying attention. You know, they have put out the Hyperspace audio cast in part because they saw the Star Wars fan audio genre out there so big. I got the gig writing a story for Star Wars Tales because of, you know, in part, the passion of the audio stuff that I was doing. Danny Pepin, who has been so involved with, you know, author interviews and such through Star Wars on Direct, when he was still part of that, eventually got to a point where he had a character named after him in one of Karen Travis's short stories. So when you hit the point where people are paying attention, you know, that's a milestone in and of itself. And whether or not that's a good thing now that they're paying attention when the genre is somewhat shifting, that I don't think we'll know the answer to that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thank you so much for that, Nathan. And we will kind of shift gears here. And then once we start talking more kind of nuts and bolts about the production side, we definitely love your input. But thanks again, Nathan.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Rich Siegfried, how are you, sir?
Hello.
This is a great honor. What now? Yeah.
Really? That's cool.
Absolutely. It's a great honor to have Rich Siegfried not only here, but also just available to share a little bit about kind of where he came from and what he's doing now. So if you could kind of give us just a little bit of what got you into the whole fan audio stuff, and then, you know, whatever you want to share, but also kind of let us know what you're doing now, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, I got my start in fan audio. I think it was cruising through TFN and seeing that Chrono Radio Episode X had just been released, and I was thinking, hey, it's kind of an accident. It must be, like, totally extreme, maybe snowboarding or something like that, like everybody dressed up as Jedis, I don't know. And so I figured I'd click on it. You know, there was nothing going on. This was obviously before podcasting was around, and they're just I didn't really have anything to listen to. And so this was, hey, this was something Star Wars themed, and so it seemed kind of cool. So I listened to it, and I think I went back into the archives and found the Chris Hanel episode. And I went and, you know, downloaded that and got hooked on DLR, Digital Llama Radio, and, you know, went back and listened to all of Chrono Radio, and I realized that I can do that. No, it was just more along the lines of somebody who I've always wanted to do radio. I've always liked entertaining people. And so, you know, just wanting to do radio, but the problem is that with kids, with a mortgage, radio doesn't pay jack. So there just wasn't any money in it. So what I decided to do was talk to Nathan, figure out exactly how he did it. Because by that time, I had already done a couple audio, just roles for audio dramas, because I'd gotten into those. And I just started to realize, like, wait a second. This whole audio stuff, this is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of TFN and the fan films and everything. And so what if there was a show to help promote those? Because Nathan was doing a lot to try to help promote audio, but he was still very focused on the timeline and a little bit of fan film stuff, because that's what most people were doing, and that was just on a show. So this was about the time that we talked quite a bit about, you know, what if there was a repository for audio like TFN, and Nathan started to put together Star Wars Fanworks, which I think was, you know, obviously one of the greatest things that could have helped the medium, the genre of fan audio in any field. Because, you know, before podcasting was around, you couldn't just go out there and just automatically have everything delivered to you. You actively had to go and find it. The best thing about TFN was that you had a location to find out all of the happenings in fan films. But with Star Wars Fanworks, here was a place where you could find out all of the information, casting calls, upcoming news, current releases of fan audio. So, you know, obviously I was just absolutely hooked at that point. And I think Requiem of the Outcast originally came out about the exact same time as fan audio or Star Wars Fanworks came out. And so, you know, I tried to cover as much of the fan audio as possible, because it was, you know, there's only so much that you can do from a website, because for some people, you know, they don't like going back to websites over and over and over again. So if there was one place that we could maybe tell people about what was going on, not only in Star Wars, but especially in fan audio, then we tried for it, you know. And I think that we did some good and we did some bad. from what I understand, after our review of Rise of Nobility, that we kind of apparently started an internal civil war amongst all of them, where they kept passing the blame back and forth to different people. And I think that was one of the many factors that led to the closing of the planned sequel, just because there was so much infighting and whatnot. And, you know, it was one of those things where I think at the time, and the only reason why we did that is we wanted to be kind of a boon for people, where we were going to be the guys that would promote the little guys. And the only reason why we went after Rise of Nobility was because that they were going around and saying that they were just so much better than everybody else. And I felt that, I mean, although, don't get me wrong, their audio was tremendous. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to it, but I felt that their attitude wasn't very conducive to furthering the family, you know, and because they were so quick to bury other people. And it's easy to do that when you have, you know, something that can kind of back that up, because their audio was such good quality, the writing was good, and the voices were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something that we also fell to, because, you know, after my first episode of doing it by myself, I realized, okay, the only reason why Nathan can do it is because he's used to standing up and talking, you know, controlling a room all day long by himself as a teacher. And I just didn't have that in me. So I brought on some co-hosts, some friends of mine from the local fan force, Ron and Janine Garner. And, you know, we kind of fit a certain gimmick where Janine was the super fan, I was the big fan, and Ron was the non-fan. And that worked out really good, but what ended up happening is that over time and compliments and accolades, that, you know, some of us started to believe our gimmick a little too much. And unfortunately, Janine took a very negative turn for a long time. And myself, you know, where she's very normally a nice person, but when the you know, record button was pushed, she would become pretty catty, and that's just because she was trying to play up to that character. And so I myself, as the producer, should have been, and, you know, the guy that's trying to run the show, I should have been squashing that or redirecting it, but I wasn't, because we just rolled with it. And we unfortunately actually, after we had dropped below 100 listeners, that was when I decided, like, well, you know, it was that, and Nathan collected a lot of complaints because people weren't coming directly to us. Because I think that if I had known that, I would have scaled it back before, but I didn't really know a lot about it. But people have been complaining to Nathan, and Nathan, in the interest of the community, came to me and was like, dude, you need to stop because even I'm ready to stop listening. And, you know, he is the biggest supporter of All Fan Audio. And so that was really just a slap in the face, like, whoa, perhaps I should pull my cranium out of my rectum. And so decided to go ahead and really reformat the show, try to make it more complimentary again because we became so negative. I mean, even to the extent of, I think, almost ruining the second Fan Audio Awards show, which, you know, I can't apologize. I can't apologize enough for the negative influence that we had. But fortunately, you know, we realized, thanks to you know, listener support, thanks to friends in the audio community, because we were a family. I mean, hey, everybody has to go bail a cousin out of jail every once in a while, and that's kind of what ended up happening with us. And fortunately, we were able to turn the show around and make it a positive influence again. And that ended up also meaning that, you know, there needed to be a shift of the hosting duties. And at that point in time, that's when Earl Newton, who, of course, director of Fall of a Saga, came on. And he was a friend of mine, somebody I had interviewed before. And so it was one of those things where he was a very close friend. He had an input in a lot of Star Wars fan productions. And so he came on, we gelled really well, and at that point in time, we realized that we needed to also shift our focus, because about that time, that was when Fan Audio was starting to shift away from dramas, which was what we were trying to promote, to more people doing their own shows, which is great, but there seemed to be just a huge influx of this thing, and it's not a competition thing. I don't think it was ever a competition thing, because with the time-shifting factors of, you know, content online, you're not vying for individuals' listener hours to a certain degree. Now, for me, that's true because I'm subscribed to over 250 podcasts just because I'm such a huge proponent of the medium, because you will not be able to find anything on TV aside from Battlestar Galactica, which will probably end up being canceled because it's actually good at some point down the road, see Firefly. And it's one of those things where on the internet you can't be canceled unless you just stop doing it. And because of that, you find that there's so much more heart and passion. That's why I would rather sit back and listen to Second Strike, or I'd rather listen to just about anything on StarWarsFanWorks.com than watch the Star Wars movies, just because there's so much more heart, there's so much more passion into it. And the best part is hardly anybody is a trained actor or trained in audio. Just about everybody is self-taught. You get that grassroots feel in there. And nowadays you can mix it with the, you know, distribution method of podcasting. And all of a sudden you have such a huge sweeping movement that, I mean, I honestly believe that podcasting is the bohemian revolution of our generation. It's the way that art gets out there, and it changes people's minds on how they view things. I think one of the major catalysts of that was a site like StarWarsFanWorks.com, because it was an example of people just getting together, producing things that all it needed was a mechanism to get out to everybody in an easier way, instead of still having to go back to a website every month or every week or every day, you know, depending upon how much stuff is released, to find it and download it.
Now you took a bit of a hiatus. And then all of a sudden I hear about Port City PD, and what in the world is going on with you now?
Okay, well, to backtrack, my hiatus was, and I'm gonna make this a little bit serious for a little bit. My hiatus was actually because I found out that my wife was, let's just say that there was a lot of personal issues going on in my life.
Okay.
And I tried to fix those, and they were just unfixable. And actually, a few months ago, which was, you know, basically another hiatus that I needed to take for just a little while, was when my wife left me and three kids. So now I'm a single father of three at home, you know, besides my normal 9-to-5 job. But here's the beauty of what we do, is that we can produce it from our home. We don't have to go to a studio. We don't have to go anywhere to do these things. I needed to take a little creative break to kind of center, to, you know, deal with obviously all these emotions, and actually making a guest appearance on another podcast, The Voice of Free Planet X, which is put together by Jared Axelrod. It's Escape Pod, which is done by Steve Ely. that my appearance on that was something that was very cathartic, because I read somebody's story that actually dealt with a lot of the emotions that I was going through. So here was an opportunity, a chance where basically audio and fan audio in particular was something that was able to help me work through a major issue. But when it comes to all the projects that I do, which I actually have to open up a browser and look at them to see what all I do anymore. obviously, I'll just go through the list and kind of how they came about. Obviously, Requiem of the Outcast, that's the flagship show of Outcast Multimedia. Sure. That's the main one that I do. We've got two actual minicasts, one of them that has had a few episodes released, and I'm starting them back up, which is called... I don't really have a name for it, come to think of it. It was just called the Roto Minicast, but then I introduced another minicast, so I've got to figure out what that one's called. I've been basically just calling it Phantomtron,
okay.
Where I myself and Phantomtron 5000 take you through the universe of fandom and kind of tell you about all kinds of things that are going on in fandom, and also Roto the Cinema Freaks, which at this point in time I had realized that Roto handles independent media. Stuff that is not fandom-based. And then, obviously, fandom, the minicast deals with fandom-specific projects. And so I wanted one where we can just basically take the piss out of Hollywood or mainstream media. And so it's going to be a very snarky show, but fortunately, instead of turning it on family members, we're going to turn it on the people that make far more money than us, and so they don't care what our opinion is.
Fair enough.
Now... Now, other ones that I've got going, I've got obviously the second one is kind of my baby because it was a dream come true, which is The Amazing Pulp Adventure starring Mr. Adventure. That, of course, is written by Davey Beauchamp, somebody who has been on our show far more times than he's listened to episodes. And it's basically an old-time radio show that we do. We've done live performances of it. We're working on it. Actually, that a mention of Pulp Adventure should be in the next volume of Podcasting for Dummies, which, of course, Requiem of the Outcast is mentioned in, which is just a complete feeling of just like acceptance or vindication. You know, like all of this hard work we've been doing is paid off. It's showing. It's something tangible. You know, instead of all this digital gobbledygook of audio that we do. But I've also got Halo Hardwired, which is actually for the Independent Wrestling Federation that I work for. I actually get paid for that podcast. That's a professional podcaster. I've also done a couple miniseries, The Rebellion is Evil, Taking the Empire Side. I found a tremendous series written by somebody who I cannot recall his name right now. And I emailed him, and then I recorded all the episodes and released it. We've also got Behind the Parsecs, which, of course, the Parsec Award was something that Requiem the Outcast was a finalist in two categories, and Mr. Adventure was a finalist and nominated in two categories, where Mer Lafferty, who does Geek Who Action Grip, also author of Tricks of the Podcasting Masters and Pseudopod and whatnot, she had asked me to do interviews since at her birthday party. Myself and Jason Adams from the Random Signal podcast went around and interviewed people on her iRiver at her party saying nice things about her. And so she said, hey, why don't you do that at Dragon Con for the first annual Parsec Awards? I was like, sure, not a problem. So I went around and doing all these interviews. But the problem was that she was thinking they'd be in an official capacity. And, of course, when I have a microphone and a touch of alcohol in me and then – and nervousness about hoping to win an award. Yeah, we went kind of nuts, and it basically turned out to be, if you look at all the interviews pieced together, it basically said something along the lines of, the entire thing is fixed, and we want to fight everybody, which everybody did it in humor. So nobody took it seriously, which was great, because it was also nice to be able to walk up to somebody like Scott Sigler, who, you know, was one of the very first Podio book authors, and, you know, who's been called a sellout because he went over to Podshow, which is Adam Curry's deal where he buys other people's podcasts. And yeah, I basically got to tell him that he sold out and then him just ranting and joking on it and riffing on the guy. So it was a lot of fun to do that, but I had to talk to Murr and say, like, look, I'm sorry, you're going to listen to these and it's not going to be able to be official. So she told me I could release them as a secretive, unofficial behind the scenes of the Parsec Awards, and so we've got that. But I actually am currently distributing three other podcasts. One of them I produce, but the rest of them I just produce the feeds for. Campfire Tales, which is actually written by a friend of mine, who basically tells stories of how the old times weren't better, they were just different. And we've had a lot of positive feedback on that because, you know, I basically call him everybody's surrogate grandpa. And they're just great stories that he sits in. He's got such a warm voice. And, I mean, we've had people tell me that, you know, their father was in the hospital, couldn't see, and because he was able to listen to these, he started to feel better. You know, he didn't feel that he was going to be so lost without his sight. Another one is Joey and David, which two guys out of New York. One of them is, I think, a writer for The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tremendous kind of a sketch comedy show. They release monthly. And one of my favorite shows that I have anything to do with, which is Hero Envy, which is such a tremendous show. I actually found out about these guys at DragonCon from one of their flyers. They weren't able to actually make it. But it's basically a show made by fanboys for fanboys. It's very comic geek themed. It's a sitcom basically, but it is just one of the geekiest, funniest shows that I've found online. And those guys weren't putting it out as a podcast. They were just putting out webisodes, making people, you know, come to the website once a month. And I was like, you guys have got to get with podcasting. It's just automatically generated. And so they told me I could handle the feed, and they brought me on the team, and I've been producing that feed. Now, the last show that I have anything to do with, actually, there's one more that I forgot about, but I'll get to that in a second. Port City PD. God, this is just insane, and I actually have the website in front of me. Of course, the website is outcastmultimedia.com. But the other show is Port City PD. Now, this, of course, being just a revolutionary show, not only online, but especially for podcasting, very first serious police drama made available online. And they've actually got their new episode coming out January 22nd, I believe. And I was producing the feed for them. These, of course, is created by friends of mine, Sean O'Rourke, formerly of Sins of the Jedi, which unfortunately will never be finished. But I had shown Sean some podcasts. And he looked at what it was, and he was like, dude, we've so got to do something. And so he got together with some of his friends, and they came up with this police show. And they've been going out and getting investors, sponsors, just tremendous stuff. And Port City PD actually just a month ago, Podshow bought the rights for the distribution rights for Port City PD. So,
wow.
My work for them has actually been scaled back considerably. But I'm still a part of the team as the podcast technical supervisor, which I think is still a made-up title. They just wanted to call me something. So, and that was actually one of the nicer names I've been called. So I went with that. But we got Port City PD. They've got the new episode coming out, and things are really rolling with that. But the show that I forgot has been one of my current babies. It's called Convince Me. This show was actually going to be so much smaller. It was kind of a spinoff of an episode that we had done of Roto a long time ago, where I went to a hobby shop and asked the gamers out there and said, hey, why don't you guys convince me to try to play miniatures or role-playing or whatever. I think it was miniatures. And then they gave their arguments and whatnot, and it was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. I like that. So I was on my way to UberCon, and I was thinking, you know, I think it'd be cool just to be able to get people to tell me, just try to convince me to try anything that's geeky, basically whatever their geeky hobby, passion, fetish, whatever it is, and I'll try it. I think, or just send me clips of it, and then the audience can be try to be convinced. Well, I told Jared Axelrod, the fellow I mentioned earlier from Voice of Free Planet X, and he said, yeah, you know what, that's a great idea, and here's what you do, and he broke it down into four acts. You get the argument, you talk about trying it and setting it up, then you try it, and then you talk about your thoughts after you do it. And I'm like, no, that's too much work, dude. I don't want to do all that. And then I thought about it, and I was like, damn it, that's just too good of an idea. So Jared Axelrod, the bane of my laziness, convinced me to expand the show, convinced me to something a little bit more. And so I went to UberCon, and in my usual fashion, you know, planned on shooting bits for one or two episodes, ended up coming up with six. And so, you know, I'm kind of slowly piecing those together. Obviously, my time has been scaled back, but that's the joy of podcasting, is that, you know, our only schedule, release schedule, is when we want to. But I do want to throw one thing out. Obviously, podcasting is something that is so easy to do that anybody can do it. And that's not a direct reflection on what I'm about to say, but Earl Newton, my co-host for Record Me the Outcast, he's just started his own podcast. It's basically a television show. It's going to be also released via cable access down in Florida where he lives, but it's also going to be made available online. And here's the cool part about it, is that it's called Stranger Things. That's available at StrangerThings.tv. This show is basically a mix of, and it also is the first of its kind, it's a little bit of Tales from the Crypt mixed with a little bit of X-Files, where it's going to be kind of scary, kind of creepy, but with that twist in the end that's going to hook you. And it's a show that I'm anxiously excited for and waiting for, not just because Earl is like a brother to me, but because he's that damn good of a writer, and it's going to be that good. And, I mean, he's got crossover from other writers and podcasters coming in and writing episodes. It's just going to be an amazing, amazing show. And to be honest, I have found that I have influenced a lot of people, and this isn't meant as like, ooh, look at me, but just by showing people what a podcast is, they've gotten into it, and they've got the bug, just got bit by the bug, and they started producing their own stuff. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've shown that to. And here's the best thing about what we do in Fan Audio. I wouldn't have gotten into podcasting, I wouldn't have investigated it, unless I had been into Fan Audio beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have been into Fan Audio if it wasn't for the fact that it was Star Wars, and people like Nathan Butler with, you know, Chrono Radio, people like Chris Hanel with Digital Llama Radio. Seeing people being able to do the very things that I had always dreamed about, and realizing that anybody could do it. And, you know, honestly, that is why what we do is so amazing. And that's why if you get a chance, tell people about doing Fan Audio or even podcasting. It doesn't matter what it is. Just tell people about it, because it can just get better. You know, we're not flooding the market with anything. It's just get out there and just tell people about it. I mean, everything's grassroots, and that's the best thing about it. And so I'm going to step off my soapbox and take a drink real quick. Get in a few words while you can.
Sure. I just so happy to have Rich here. And Rich is the big brother that went off to college and became a star. And I'm humbled that he's here, and he really has a lot to share. And I think one of the coolest things is he still has a love for the genre, and he never grew beyond that. He never said, that was where I came from. I don't care about that. And I think we all are kind of evangelists to the genre, and we all have something to share. And it's just kind of like what Rich was alluding to, is that, I think sometimes you have to teach before the people that you're talking to can love. So it takes a moment of time to kind of explain what it is. And once they become accustomed to it, I think, you know, they're going to be like, you know, the best cheesecake in town. They're going to beat down the door to get to it. But I think there is a point where you have to help tell people about it. And thanks so much, Rich, for answering a couple of questions and sharing. And, you know, You're a bro here, so thanks so much.
Well, hey, I just love hearing my voice on other people's stuff.
Okay, now, I don't think... All right, let's see here. We're just going to play just a brief intermission, and we're going to check and see if Mr. Russell shows up, so just bear with us for just a short bit of time, and we will be right back. And let me Is she here? Live talk show is just cool. Let's see here.
Of radio, when the world huddled around their radios to hear their favorite stories of drama, suspense, and comedy, we reveal that today the timeless art is still alive. Even in 2007, a great script, great actors, some mood music, and sound effects can draw listeners into deep, immersive stories that the world enjoyed in the past. So tonight, Roni's Own Productions presents the 2007 Fan Audio Online Summit, in which we will highlight the best of fan audio dramas and parodies, and will introduce you to groups of internet producers using updated technology to recreate the timeless craft of the past. We will also discuss the hows, whys, and wherefores of fan audio collaboration, production, and much, much more. So sit back, relax, and listen to just a taste of the best of fan audio on the internet. Well, thanks again for joining us today, and Mr. William Lundeen is here as well. And there was a third party that we, actually fourth party, that we wanted to talk to, and I don't think Russell is on the chat or on the phone. So, Mr. William?
Hey there, how are y'all doing? I've been having a great time so far.
Now,
Did you want to speak specifically and kind of introduce Russell's fanaudio.com and talk to him, talk about him and his work, or do you want me to do it?
You know what? I'll try to do Russell some justice here, and I apologize if I get anything wrong. Later on when you're listening in, you can always submit a rebuttal or correction notice. Fanaudio.com. Fanaudio.com. So let's see. What I've discerned beforehand doing some prep for this is that Russell Sanders, back in September 2006, founded the Fan Audio Society, serve as a bridge to bring together various fan bases and provide a mutual support system for all fans exploring audio productions as a method to continue and expand their favorite storylines. Yeah, that's something I copied off their website.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
No, please ask a question. That helps.
Well, they focus on two genres from what I can tell at this point is the classic Battlestar Galactica, which is Starbuck and Boomer in the TV series original Inception. And
oh, yeah, that's
the
Exodus series they have.
Correct.
They have a series called the Exodus series, yeah.
Yes, and they also focus on Conan also.
Yeah. Now, that's one which before I listened to some of it, I was like kind of tilting my head to the side and sort of shaking it like I had water in my ears. And because for me, Conan seemed like something more book and very few films, really, mm-hmm. based. And, you know, I was easily, you know, convinced that the Star Wars and Star Trek universes were filled with possibilities. Battlestar Galactica, even as a kid when I was watching the first episodes, I always thought of it as being sort of a one-trick pony. You're going from here to there, and then you're done. Of course, the point of the journey is not always to arrive, and once it did arrive on Earth, I was very bummed. But Conan, that was very interesting. I mean, to see people do things like what they've done there, and possibly in the future branch out, I don't know, to what if they brought back Tarzan?
I'm getting some great stuff on the chat that reminds me they are doing X-Men episodes, and also they are talking about Dark Shadows, and I don't know if it's highlighting that there is some Dark Shadows audio reenactments on the internet, or if they're working on it. So it's kind of a wider base, but what's really cool and interesting is it's not overlapping on what Jeffrey Bridges is doing. So we're really kind of talking about almost a full spectrum of really cool, interesting fantasy and sci-fi stories here tonight. So I think everybody kind of touches a different area. And Russell has been a great guy, and we have been introduced through Nathan, kind of bumped into him, and so we've kind of cross-worked a little bit. And what I like about Russell's work, I've listened to a number of the episodes of the Battlestar Galactica Exodus, is it's more of a gritty look at the characters, and where Star Wars, it can be that. It's more of an action kind of a genre. And but the Battlestar Galactica, there is some action, but it's more of a character study. And that's what I really kind of appreciated about what Russell was doing with that. Did you feel the same way?
I would. And I know right now if you go over to their to the Fan Audio site, you know, they have a poll going right now about what people would like to hear in the future. And just the range of things I ask people to vote on, whether it's Jules Verne-type stories, Lost Civilization, horror. You know, imagine someone saying Cthulhu. Well, I won't say it a third time. You know, King Arthur, pirates. People are always into pirates, my nephews. But the things they're willing to do, and it's, you know, very, very well organized. It's clean. They've got lots of good information over there. I like visiting fanaudio.com.
And it's nice because, you know, the whole, you know, I don't know, we've kind of traded things around, and I hope also that, you know, we can also kind of, you know, work hand in hand somehow with Jeffrey Bridges' group and their great stuff. But anyway, it definitely, those are the three groups I really wanted to highlight tonight: Star Wars Fanworks, Pendant Productions, and also FanAudio.com. I think those are the three, to me, at this point right now, what I can find is the best group of fan audio on the internet today. Now, obviously, probably in the chat, or, you know, maybe we can, you know, talk about other groups that folks have heard about. But
looked up the large group of Barney enthusiasts and Barney parody shows. But other than that, we've gotten the good stuff.
Okay. Now, that is what I wanted to do, kind of do an introduction, and obviously the folks at FanAudio.com are continuing to do their episodes. I know Russell is continuing to work on his different episodes and the different producers that he has with him. So, you know, I think everyone is really hard at work and to continue to move their different group forward. I do want to shift gears just a little bit. That was kind of the first part of it. And now I really want us to, I'm going to open up the phone mic so we can chat one-on-one. And I really kind of want to ask the whole group of us to kind of trade ideas so we can kind of really be leaner, cleaner as far as how we're going to be doing our production work. If somebody has a great website or a great idea of how to do the production side, maybe some hardware, software, mixing, maybe a collaboration kind of a thing. So I'm going to go and open up the mics, and we'll kind of start with a subject, and hopefully we'll stay on track. But anyway, we got a little bit of time, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. And the first subject I just kind of want to throw out there is as far as writing. That's obviously the first step. Do any of you guys write with someone else? Do you ever collaborate with somebody else when you're writing?
You know what? I haven't previously with any of the audio shows that we do yet, but our new show that's coming out at the end of March, The Kingery, it's an original show, and we've got a staff of five writers, and so it's been a new experience, all of us working on that together.
How do you trade thoughts and things like that? Is it through email or?
Actually, we did. We sent emails back and forth for a long time. There's five writers, myself included, and then we did a couple of online chats, and you know, got it all kind of worked out between each other, creating the characters, crafting the overall story that we wanted to tell, and all of that.
Okay, so online chat and whatever, MSN or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. William and I have been using a wiki, and I kind of wanted to just kind of throw that idea out there, because a wiki can also give you the freedom to just create on the fly. If an idea sticks, it's good. If not, it doesn't. And especially when we're talking about parodies, like William and I do a lot, is, I mean, it's great to kind of start an idea and then somebody gives a thumbs up or thumbs down. Has anyone ever worked with a wiki in that type of format before, trying to collaborate and write?
This is Rich. Actually, I have done something a little bit differently. There is a software called Celtx, C-E-L-T-X, that you can set it up to where you write a script and then you upload it to the servers, and you can tell it specifically to share with a different user or make it public. And then there have been times with Earl and I where we've done that with, for, you know, if we did a skit on the show or anything like that, and he'll check it out, he'll download it, read through it, change it, whatever. And because you can track changes with that software, he would then save it and upload it. The only reason why I did that is because I originally set up a wiki on my site, and unfortunately, this was when I was with Nexus. Unfortunately, for some reason, it just shut down. It would not work again. Couldn't figure it out. Now that I've actually switched hosts, I've got one up that you know nobody knows about yet, and I've just been really skittish about trying that because we ended up losing so much when the other wiki went down. And, you know, if you've got a stable enough environment for something like that, I think Wiki is a genius idea because, you know, you can have certain people to have permissions to go in and change it. I think it's a great idea, but you really have to make sure before you put too much time invested in something like that is to make sure that it is, in fact, stable.
What did you use to send the documents back and forth again, Rich?
The software is called Celtex, CELTX.com. And what it is, it's actually scripting software. It's completely free. It's open source. And it's one of the most amazing bits of free software when it comes to writing that I found. So if you're a script writer, I really advise you to go check it out.
If you could go ahead and type that URL in the chat box and go ahead and hit enter and throw it up on the screen.
Sure. There you go.
Cool. Has anyone ever used the whole Gmail sharing of documents and spreadsheets and all that?
I guess not.
Okay. All right. The thing that we have kind of worked into because we're William and I are moving more toward the production side of producing a multi-part audio work, just kind of like we all do, is using a different software to kind of track all the different tasks or whatever. So there was something on the host that I set up, and we're using that to kind of keep track of all the parts and the different steps of the process to kind of keep us on track because, you know, when you start talking about four or five different multi-part productions, it's just insane. So, I mean, does anybody have any help or ideas to kind of keep on track as far as tasks and who's doing what and all that?
I just go for something that I would say is probably the simplest of solutions, which is as I'm producing, you know, whatever it might be, I make sure that most of my documents are in Microsoft Word. So mm-hmm. I set up tables that I use just to check off the bigger tasks, like with Chrono Radio right now with only a few episodes left. I have all the different chunks of those episodes listed, and then as I get them done, I just put an X in the box. But what I found with Word, I'm sure other programs do the same thing, is if you're working from a script for an audio drama and such, then just color code it. I mean, lines that are in blue are ones that you've got that you haven't mixed in yet, or scenes that are totally highlighted in red are done, or lines that are highlighted where it looks like an actual highlighter has gone over the page, maybe those are lines that haven't been turned in yet. You know, something pretty simple like that, and then as you're putting it together, get into the habit of some type of uniform system for how you're going to sort your files. Because when it comes down to it, I mean, what I've found is probably the toughest part from an organizational standpoint isn't making sure you kept track of all the different things to do. It's making sure that you have all the things that you need sitting right there. I got to a point where whenever I was mixing, I guess it was Act 3 of Second Strike way back when, back in like 2003, I guess it was, where what we would do is I had, like, you know, all my sound effects divided by you know, directory. You know, you had atmospheric sounds, weapon sounds, explosions. What type of explosion? Is there an echo? All divided into different directories. And, yeah, it means you got to click through more stuff to get to the files you want, but you know exactly where you are. It can get to the point where you can do that with lines that come in. You know, this is so-and-so scene, whatever. And have already gone through and edited that file down to only have the best takes, the ones you actually want to use. It's a little extra work in the pre-production side, or I guess the early production side, but when you start mixing it together, I mean, it's a lifesaver because it's the more organization you have, the faster you're going to be able to find the stuff that you need, and that's what takes up the most time. It's not putting it together and tweaking the sound and stuff. It's where the heck is this file of so-and-so's recording that they sent me a month ago that now I have to use.
You know what we do over at Pendant that's along the same lines is that every script that we send out, every line of dialogue is completely numbered. And we have people, when they're sending their lines in, number each of them and put the number before their character name for each file and then send them in And then when they come in, you can just sort them into a folder for all of the lines for one particular episode. And then when you need to, you know, mix the episode, you go there and you can spot easily if any of them are missing, and you've got them all lined up in perfect order, so you always know where they are.
It's a great idea.
That process actually helped us quite a bit when we were doing Second Strike, because they're, originally it was supposed to be mixed by three people. It was supposed to be Nick Long, Chris Newsom, and Chris Hanel. Chris Hanel was going to do the last one. Then it turned out that it was taking so long to get the files back and forth to the other guys for them to get started that Chris went ahead and jumped into doing Act 1, and he got so busy he wasn't going to be able to do 2 and 3, so I wound up being, you know, kind of coming in to pick up 2 and 3. So files were changing hands all over the place, and we reached a point where, I don't know how it happened, but a nice chunk of the lines disappeared. It seemed like nobody had these files that at some point we knew somebody had to have had because we knew they'd been turned in. And at that point, we had not instituted any type of system of keeping track of everything. It was the first time we'd ever tried something like that. And that probably cost us a good, I would say, 2 weeks to a month of time that we could have spent editing that was instead spent tracking down these files, tracking down the actors, having them either resubmit lines in a couple of cases, so they were just minor lines, or having them send their files over again because we asked them to please hang on to your files until we tell you that the project is done, even if you're just, you know, zipping it up and sticking it somewhere in a corner of your hard drive just in case something happens here. But one thing, if anything, was learned from working on Prelude to Hope back with Devin and them in the fan film genre is that, you know, Murphy's Law can apply to fan productions. There were so many times that files were lost or computers crashed or hard drives just ceased to work that, you know, backups became the mantra. You know, what have you done today? Have you backed it up today? You know, if you can't answer yes to the last question, do not turn anything off, that sort of thing.
And let's really kind of talk about that. That's come up on the FanWorks boards, and I would imagine that everyone has really had either someone that happened to someone they know or them or whatever. What is the now I know the mantra that Nathan is saying, have you backed up today? But what do you use to back up? Do you have an external hard drive? Let's kind of talk about that.
Well, this is Robbie, and I've got everything as far as the audio things put out on my fan on my external hard drive because my computer is some years old now, and so the internal hard drive doesn't have a whole lot of space. And I found out that it really was beginning to be sort of a hamper, kind of a limit type thing, and when you you know, if you don't have, like, my computer would just have, like, 11 gigs, and so, you know, that's not going to allow for a lot of heavy-handed recording, because there are sometimes, there's been some instances when I was, like, recording shows with people like say, Rich and with other people, that some of our files would end up being, you know, way long. And
sure.
And those initial files, when you're recording, if you're, you know, in the memory, can be huge. And I found out fast, you know, that I was running out bad. And I think that having, if you don't have an internal hard drive that's got, like, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 gigs or something like that, an external hard drive is a great idea, especially with computers that if you have crash problems a lot. And if you have, you know, if you've ever had a situation happen where your computer crashed so badly that you lose everything because... And so I felt that, and that has happened to me one time some years ago, and I felt that that is a very, you know, dangerous type situation. And I felt much more secure a couple of years ago when I got the external hard drive because I could move all my audio files, all my Star Wars and Beyond files, all the software that I used to make the show and everything like that, have that outside of the internal computer drive, and it seems to me like it's a security measure. It kind of generates, you know, maybe a little bit of safety as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeffrey, did you have anything to add about the hard drive question?
Not really. I don't have an external hard drive. All I do is just back everything up onto DVDs, usually in triplicate, so that I make sure if anything happens to one of them, I've still got extras.
And that's definitely another option as well. Is a lot of folks just swear by the whole DVDs, and they may put the date on it, and they know what they had on it, or there's even programs to print out what's on the different discs, and then they just put that in the file. So there's a lot of different options. And, you know, the bottom line, I'm going to gingerly say this, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but whether it's podcasting or whether it's fan audio, it takes money. That's the hard reality. And when folks, you know, sometimes they come into it and, you know, they have, you know, a chewing gum and a matchstick, and they go, well, I want to do a show or a fan audio. It takes some money, you know, and you have to kind of be prepared for the crash and well, whatever you're doing. You know, that may mean buying an external burner and burn all your files on a DVD or getting an external hard drive. Whatever that means, then that means that's what you're going to have to do, because you never know. Hard drives do not last forever. And let's go back to kind of a huge main question is, do you physically have a desktop or do you use a laptop? And let's kind of talk about just that in general at first. What do you guys swear by?
Jeff, actually, I wanted to cut in and say something really quick.
Sure.
With what you were saying earlier about this taking money, there are cheaper alternatives to doing a lot of this stuff. When it comes to backing up your data, you don't have to get a DVD burner. Now, when it comes to the audio dramas, you obviously want to keep your files as you know, high quality as possible. But let's face it, if you're doing a show, you don't need to have, you know, 5.1 surround sound. You don't need to work with the WAV files. You can actually convert those to MP3, and that saves a lot of space, because if I don't do that, I know each episode of Roto will probably be about a gig to 2 gigs between Earl's half and my half put together, plus any extras that we throw in it. But when I drop it down to MP3, I can usually get one episode below all of the source files and everything below 100 megs. And so obviously after about 7 episodes, I can burn those onto a CD and not have to worry about that. So, I mean, I understand that there are big money alternatives to getting stuff, whether it's backing up or even microphones and stuff like that and hosting and whatnot, but we also don't want to scare anybody away. We want to remember, I mean, I know originally I started recording everything on my camcorder, and so I would actually maintain my backups on and all my source files on mini DV tape, because that's where my audio was, and I would just dump that onto the computer, and then I could delete all the rest of the files later on. Because
that's a really good idea, Rich.
Not to mention, with hosting anymore, there are plenty of free alternatives out there. I've really been meaning to put together an entire list of all of them, but there's free hosting or even cheap hosting. I think you can go to Libsyn and get like a plan for $5 a month, and they don't charge by bandwidth. They charge only by storage space. So you could have 5 trillion listeners, which for some reason I don't understand why everybody on the planet would be downloading your episodes multiple times, but you could basically have so many people downloading, but bandwidth is not an issue. And when it comes to generating a feed, I mean, you can get a Blogger account. There's FeedBurner. There's all these free ways to do a show. So just there, you know, and this is something that whenever I go to convention, whenever I do appearances and stuff like that, you know, everybody's always so quick to tell people how much they've invested in. And I mean, the best part is that their show usually translates to that, where it sounds like it's got all that production value. But let's face it, when you know, Roto, when we first started, we were putting this stuff out at, I think, like 8K mono on the feed, because I was worried that about bandwidth and space and whatnot. And what's worse is it was recorded on the camcorder. So I don't understand how we had anybody listening, because I didn't know how they could listen. You know, the quality was so bad. But it's one of those things where, you know, when you start off, you want to focus on the content instead of the so much like what you're spending on stuff. Because if the content's good, because, I mean, you know, if crap sounds clear as a bell, it's still crap, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there, make sure people weren't worrying too much. But to answer the question that you had posed before I really interrupted, I actually have both. I typically do my work on the laptop because it's more portable. I'm not stuck in the corner in my living room, you know, kind of away from the kids. But with the laptop, I can sit in the chair. They can come up to me. We can still do things while I'm editing, because there are times where, you know, we're playing a board game while I've got headphones. You know, I've got one headphone in while I'm editing, and I'll just lean over, do some clicks, or I do it at work when I'm really not supposed to be, and
sure.
I'm constantly you know, while I'm drawing something, I'll just be sitting there drawing, because that's what I do. I'm a technical illustrator. And just draw, and then switch windows. Okay, cut here, slide this over. Okay, play. All right, back to drawing and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a mixture for me of both laptop and actually two different desktops in two different locations.
Yeah, now, I certainly appreciate what you're sharing about the free programs and really inexpensive ones. My point was to get people to prepare. If that's scary,
right.
Then
right.
That's scary. But I definitely always want to let people know that there's always things to consider and why you need to do it. But definitely what you're sharing is great. I mean, the cost for, you know, these external hard drives or the external space online is very inexpensive now. I mean, with the whole influx of Gmail and the bigger things and all this, I mean, just space is very inexpensive these days. But when you start talking about a desktop, then when you're talking about recording, I am a mixer kind of a guy. And when you add a mixer to it, then you have to have power. Now, when you have a setup with your desktop, what is all included in that?
Well, if you're using a mixer, obviously you need a mixer, and it'll depend on whether you want it to go out digital with a USB or if you still want to do the audio deal. Then, you know, you're going to need some way to get from the mixer to the sound card. Not to mention that you also need, you know, a microphone. And then let's face it, if you've got a mixer and if you're just doing it by yourself, you only need one microphone. But if you've got somebody else, you need another microphone. Plus, you need some good headphones to kind of get your levels and everything. But if you were going to go a different route besides the mixer, I mean, even as much as, you know, with, like I say, with the cheaper alternative, even just a standard $10 microphone from Staples or Walmart, and, you know, you've got your audio in right there.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever tried, or has anyone tried, a USB into a desktop that... I mean, with any kind of success, or let's kind of talk, I mean, based on what Rich is saying, the bare bones cheapest way to create somewhat quality sounding recording, whether you're doing a part or whatever for a fan audio work.
Well, if you want to take the example from my personal experience, I mean, if you go back and listen to Second Strike, which I will still stand by to this day, I still think it, you know, kicks butt. Again, I'm biased, but, you know, it's sort of my first. But that was recorded on what we're just talking about, one of those cheapo $10 or whatever it is microphones. I have never, outside of conventions, when, you know, Rich had his set up there, I have never moved beyond the quick and easy mono microphone that you can just get very cheaply at Radio Shack. It's that little, you know, that in this case, Telex, I guess it is, the one that looks like, you know, a little stick, little white stick. From a mixing standpoint, right now, you know, I mean, you can mix in, as long as it's a multi-track editor, I'm not sure it's going to make much of a difference, whether it's Audacity, Wavelab, as long as you have multi-track in there, it makes it easier. But even going back to my, you know, absolute earliest stuff, when I first put together, there were some screwed up episodes of Digital Llama Radio that I actually helped mix way back in the day for Chris and them. That, you know, that was mixed on QuickTime Pro. You know, as long as you have something that lets you take this stuff and kind of, you know, scoot it around, mix it around, then you should be fine. And any type of, you know, I mean, the computer, I have yet to run across any computer in my experience that I have bought within the last few years. And the one I've mixed Second Strike and such on was a Dell Inspiron 8100 from late 2001, which the monitor eventually died on a couple of times. And I've got a desktop that I have now, another Dell that I bought, I guess, probably about a year and a half ago. I've yet to see a recently purchased computer that cannot churn out a quality audio drama if you've done some quality mixing with it. It may take longer to render, but as long as that thing's not freezing in mid-render, then you're fine. It's just a matter of patience. You don't have to have the absolute newest stuff to be able to pull this off. It's just a question of, you know, pacing yourself and sort of giving yourself your own little internal calendar that'll let you say, you know, if I want this done by tomorrow and it's going to take 10 hours to render when, you know, I can't imagine something taking that long unless it's a really lower-end computer, but if it's going to take 10 hours to render, then, you know, make sure you've set aside the 10 hours for it. That's more personal discipline, I think, than it is technology.
Sure. Well,
Jeff, can I say something?
Go ahead.
You know, I agree with Nathan a lot right there, because I have a very similar setup. I have a simple, cheap little microphone, and I use WaveLab, you know, which is a great multi-track program, you know. It works real well for just, you know, for complex productions. And I do have a slow computer. You know, my computer is almost 7 years old now. And it has froze in mid-render, and that is the biggest pain. And so I would strongly suggest to anybody, we talked earlier about backing up. Also, if you're using these kind of editing files, you know, when you're in your montage file, save, you know, all the time. Hit that save button, you know, because then you're going to have to go back and redo it if you don't before you render. Mm-hmm. Before you render, make sure that thing is saved. And, you know, I have a practice of turning off, you know, whatever programs are not necessary to save up the space and the processing power of that computer, and it works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so I think Nathan is right on the ball with this. You know, keep it simple and keep it easy, because you can make something sound extravagant without having to go all out. And I'm not saying that if you go all out that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying it's not a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about collaborating as far as writing, and we've talked about the different parts of the hardware. And we've talked about microphones, and then WaveLab and Audacity start to come up. Audacity is almost the set software for mixing an audio drama in general, only because it's free and it's kind of workable. What do you guys say?
You know, I personally use Adobe Audition, but Pete Mylan, who directs our Batman show, he does all of it in Audacity, and it sounds amazing. I mean, that's a credit to him as a director, but the program itself, as long as you know what you're doing with it and take the time to learn it, you can turn out great stuff from Audacity.
I've heard nothing but great things about Audacity almost across the board. I'm lucky enough to have Magic's Music Studio and Adobe Audition, so. And use them both now and again. Anybody else?
Well, Jeff, this is William. What I've liked about Audacity, I've used a number of different programs and boards and tape drives and knives and tape splicing stuff together in the past, but is that I don't have to worry about it upgrading every few weeks and having it not be compatible with prior versions.
Mm.
For me, that's a bonus.
Rami, you had some thoughts, or?
Well, yeah, I was just what he just said, you know, about things coming out of date and everything. Now, I use WaveLab, and so fortunately, I haven't had that issue of trying to download upgrades or anything like that. But yes, I started with Audacity too, and it seemed like a workable program. And I have had things that go out that I can't use anymore, or they just don't work very well on my computer because I don't have XP. And so I think that's another thing that you need to keep an eye out on as well. Whatever you're going to use, be it Audacity or WaveLab or what'd you say, Music Studio, I think, for you, Jeff?
Magic,
Yeah, Magic Music Studio. Whatever you use, make sure that it's system compatible with what you've got, you know, if it's 98, Millennium, XP, you know, whatever. I imagine they're probably going to be freaking out here the next few months when Vista gets out. So.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just know for me, I used to do a lot of work putting all my audio and video into real audio formats. And I thought that was great because I can press it down from what I had as a wave and save a lot of space and stream it or download it. But over the years, as MP3 gained popularity and such like that, and as real audio started adding arguably adware and even spyware to their stuff, you know, I was like, well, I wish I had kept my WAV file so I could at least remaster it into MP3s rather than go from my already compressed real audio. And who knows what Apple or someone else will do in a few years to make AAC or MP4Us or whatever go out of style.
Yeah, well, Go ahead.
One thing I was going to tell was if you have a good program, now I don't know if Audacity will work with this, but a way that you can reestablish a WAV file is if you do have something like Audacity or WaveLab. You know, I don't know if it'll work with all the others, but when I remixed and re-edited my first episode, I just took the original mono file, stuck it in there, and then you just save as, and you set the conditions for, you know, full 44.1 stereo wave, you know, whatever the specifications are you want, and it should revert it to very much near stereo quality, if not CD quality. Very close to. I think you can recover in that regard if you've got the right program.
I find it interesting that William there mentioned the real media stuff. That really is where Star Wars fan audio began, because the first big name Star Wars fan made radio show, Jedi Talk, was released through streaming real media files. But over the years, of course, as he mentioned, you know, MP3 became much more popular. But we're still learning things about those styles even as we go along here. Like I don't know if it's the last episode of Fan Audio News Source or the previous one, in one of those answers to fan audio questions, I had been asked why the last time that I did a full-length feature commentary to play alongside a Star Wars DVD, I had done it as a WMA file instead of an MP3. Well, come to find out, using an MP3, a lot of times the way its compression scheme works is going to knock out a few seconds here and there of any dead air, because your ear's not going to perceive that second most of the time, or that nanosecond or whatever. But it's going to add up, and it's going to wind up causing your file to get out of sync with the film, even at some of the higher compression rates, at least through program. I mean, I know WaveLab did it, and I tried a couple of other programs that wound up working out pretty much the same way. So it's kind of one of those things we're still learning, and, you know, as you said, who knows what's going to come up next. It's like that Saturday Night Live skit just a couple of days ago with Steve Jobs introducing the new iPhone. He's like, you know, you can film a movie while watching a movie and reading the subtitles for the new episode of The Office over and over again, and then finally they ask him, you know, well, what's the battery life? 20 minutes, you know? we're never going to know what's the next thing. The good news is that for now, there are standards. And there are very few in the fan audio genre who deviate beyond those, and when they do, they're usually doing it to push things forward. Like, if you look at Star Wars Action News, which is arguably the single most listened to Star Wars podcast out there at the moment, anywhere. I think the numbers would prove that. I mean, I don't want to get into the specifics, but I've been talking to Arnie, and it's amazing to me. Well, they are producing regular MP3s, but they're also now producing the M4A files, the iTunes files, so that they can now also include, you know, little, you know, images off to the side to go along with whatever it is they're talking about. So even now, seeing sort of a transition, I don't think MP3 is finally going to die and give way to M4A, but the option is out there now for people to push it even more in terms of quality. So we've gone real media to MP3 or MP3 and WMA for some folks, and now kind of moving along. But you'll still, every now and then, there are still radio shows out there that I see being released now and then that are being put out in wave format. They're highly compressed waves, but they're still wave format in one, you know, in one sense or another.
Let's see, Jeffrey, did you have something to add as well?
Not really. I don't think we produce all of our shows in MP3 at 128, but we reduce them down to 32 for putting up on our website so that they're more accessible to people with dial-up and you know, things like that, so that everyone can actually listen to them. Because like a 20 megabyte MP3 file can be pretty prohibitive to people on dial-up. And so, but then we keep the high resolution versions, and we are offering them up in like collections of like 10 or 12 episodes via BitTorrent.
Okay, gentlemen, we have a very interesting thing now. We need to wrap up the show, and I do want to mention Danny Papine is also logged in and listening, and I just want to give my hat off to Danny, and he was a stalwart member of the Star Wars on Direct cast show, and he's also working on Omega Squad now, which is a Star Wars fan audio product and a project that's going on. And what we're going to do is we will take this discussion up again, and we will have another show. I'm not sure what I'll call it. Maybe it's a fan audio chat or something like that. But as you can see, this is a viable option to get together and talk. What's nice is TalkShoe is recording this as we speak, and they are doing all the hard work. And they will push this out probably 15 minutes after this show is done. It will be able to be downloaded. And don't you know, I will be promoting this, as I hope you guys will too. I just want to thank you guys for joining us. And please stop by RoniZone.com and also StarWarsFanWorks.com. I post over there, and we will keep you apprised as far as the next fan audio chat. I think this is very important to keep this genre alive. And again, I just want to thank you guys for joining us, and we will meet up again, and hope to see you guys then. Okay? See you guys?
Thanks. Yes, sir.
Okay. And I do this. Thank you for joining us for the 2007 Fan Audio Online Summit. If you have any further questions, you can visit RoniZone.com and click on the Contact Us link. We would be happy to assist you. We would also like to thank the participants today and wish them much success in 2007. Please visit their respective websites and support their great work. Until next year, this is Jeff Roney and William Lundeen saying goodbye, and we'll see you next year at the 2008 Fan Audio Online Summit. For more great comedy, interview podcasts, and audio projects, please visit RoniZone.com.
Batman, the Ace of Detectives. Issue 1, Creeping.